Two brothers, when united, form the Disney Majors, fighting the powers of evil with their mouths. Here's your hosts, Jake and Eli Hollingsworth.
Hello, everyone. I'm Eli Hollingsworth, and I'm joined by my brother and co-host,
Jake Hollingsworth. And hello, everyone. Welcome back to the podcast. And let's address the big, glaring issue that you may have noticed that I've been notified about by certain people. Is that we have not uploaded a podcast in a while, because it has been...
It's been a minute, but we've just gotten busy lately.
We've been busy, among other things. We've been busy, and because, like, we had Thanksgiving, and we had a few other things, like, before that. We went to a homecoming, which was fun, and then we had a bunch of other stuff that happened, but we're back, and we've also missed a bunch of things. The main set that we've missed has just been a bunch of Spider-Man No Way Home rumors, which, big surprise.
Yeah.
And also, I've been trying to convince Eli to let us take a break from No Way Home, but he's like, no, we must cover
it. Well, we can't now, because the movie is literally releasing in 8 days. Well, I mean, technically 9 days, but technically 8 days, because it releases next Thursday. So, that's... Again, if you didn't know
this... We're seeing it on Thursday.
If you didn't know this, which you should at this point, movie theaters will never tell you this, but they always release a movie actually the Thursday before it comes out. They will advertise it, they will promote it, they will say that it comes out on Friday.
But it really comes out on a Thursday. That's how we saw Rise of Skywalker.
Yeah, exactly.
Big mistake. Of all movies, it was Rise of Skywalker. Rise of Skywalker, we had the crowd that went crazy at everything, but we didn't have that for Endgame. I remember being so mad. Remember, I heard other people say that they had theaters that went nuts, and I'm just like, I wanted that. I'm hoping that we get that for No Way Home. I'm keeping my fingers crossed that we get that for No Way Home.
I know, it's gonna be awesome. No Way Home is just... Okay, yeah,
so... my question for you is, put this in the poll. Make this our poll. My question for you guys when it comes to No Way Home is... Are you ready to tear the roof next week when certain people show up?
So, with No Way Home, obviously we haven't made a podcast episode since the trailer released. Our last podcast episode is us talking about how excited we are for the second trailer of No Way Home.
No, actually, was it really?
Yes, it was, yes. So, that was what we talked about on our last episode.
Also, a few hesitant reasons as well.
So, that was about a month ago. So... Yeah. If you haven't been keeping up with the Movie Majors YouTube channel, which you probably should, on our YouTube channel, we hosted a live stream where we watched the trailer when it dropped.
And, we did like a little Q&A beforehand.
Mm-hmm, and we did our reaction to it, and we posted a breakdown of the trailer, which I was very proud of. Noticed a lot of things that I didn't see very many people talking about.
And of course, there was the big meme of Lizard being punched by nothing. I made a joke saying Miles Morales confirmed.
If you want to see our reaction to the trailer and our breakdown and all that stuff, then just go watch the videos on YouTube, the Movie Majors YouTube channel. And, so that's that with the No Way Home trailer. But lately we've been getting a ton of new TV spots for the trailer.
Oh yeah, a bunch of
30 seconds to 1 minute clips of the movie coming out, just little promotional material just to show on ads, like before you see a YouTube video or something, if you don't have the YouTube Plus or whatever it is. And there have been little breadcrumbs of new footage, like little just 2 second clips of new footage for No Way
Home.
One
of the ones that we got was like Spider-Man's friends going into the Sanctum, and Ned's like, I can't believe I'm in the Sanctum Sanctorum. Dr. Strange just goes, neither can I.
Yeah.
Which some people are saying that seems like a little bit of out of character response for Doctor Strange to do. I personally... So basically there's three options when it comes to Doctor Strange. It's either someone's posing as him, he's being overconfident, or what Eli thinks, he's been John Wattified to be silly. I am in team two, where it's possibly Doctor Strange just being overconfident. Because I don't think Mysterio would have the illusion power to fake that.
Yeah, I definitely think that theory is a little bit out there, like that the whole movie is an illusion by Mysterio.
Oh yeah, that was a theory. That was a theory even before all the multiverse rumors started flying.
That's
way too out there.
That's a little bit of a stretch.
Basically, this whole movie.
If they do reveal that at the end, then I don't know what I would think about
that. Plot twist. Well, that's like the epic plot twist. But also, this is basically the Marvel. This is basically the MCU adaptation of the famous / infamous Spider-Man story called One More Day. Which, long story short, is set after the comic Civil War, not the movie one. The comic Civil War, where Aunt May is dead and Peter goes to Marvel's version of the devil named Mephisto to try and make everybody forget that he's Spider-Man. But Mephisto agrees, but Peter has to sacrifice his marriage with Mary Jane. And so it's actually a really sad story. So he does it, and then everyone forgets Peter Parker is Spider-Man, and then he has to sacrifice his relationship with Mary Jane. So basically him and Mary Jane never get married, and they basically never knew each other and never get to have a kid. And which, that was something that all Marvel fans get mad at them for, is that they can never let Spider-Man and MJ be together.
Yeah.
Like, that's even in the comics, that's something that everyone got mad for. Like, they can never let them be together.
Yeah, I mean, and they
also. And also, notice it's very similar in this movie, where he's going to. Instead of Mephisto, because they can't do a devil character in a Marvel movie, most likely Disney. Well, yeah, that's Disney, not true. Disney, that's not for sure, but yeah. I don't think Disney will let them do that.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, instead of that, it's Spider-Man going to Doctor Strange to ask people to make him forget he's Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
Which is signaling very much like a One More Day adaptation.
That's partly what sparked the fan theories that Doctor Strange might be Mephisto in disguise or something. Like that, or being controlled by even maybe Wanda Maximoff or something. Which, I don't know about that.
That's a stretch. Being controlled by Wanda Maximoff, I find to be a stretch.
Which, again, my personal theory is just that it's nothing. Like, Doctor Strange is acting like that the way he is. Because he is definitely acting out of character. Like, he's a little bit more silly and not as, like, serious as he usually is.
I thought he goes back and forth between being silly and serious all the time.
Eh, not really. He's mostly just silly. Like, just...
Let's Scooby-Doo this!
And, so... My personal theory is just... He's just been Wattsified, as I call it. Like, just...
John Watts, the director of this movie.
Yes. John Watts, the director of Spider-Man Homecoming, Spider-Man Far From Home, and Spider-Man No Way Home. It's just natural his movies are just a little bit more silly and not as serious as a lot of other movies. So, I just think that his portrayal of Doctor Strange is just a little bit more silly than what we're used to in the MCU. I don't think it's some big plot point that explains it. I think it's just John Watts' handling of the character... is just a little bit more silly than other interpretations. Like, for example, the, what was it? Black Widow. In the Iron Man 2, she was a really, like, serious, focused character.
Oh, you complain about this all the time.
And, some people complained about some aspects of that, but, and then in Avengers, which was directed by Joss Whedon, and whereas Iron Man 2 was directed by Jon Favreau, she was a lot more silly and, like, just cracking jokes all the time.
I think you're thinking of Winter Soldier.
Well, even in Avengers, too, she was still, like, cracking jokes a lot more and, like, being a lot more sarcastic and silly. And then that was even more when it got taken, when she got put in the hands of the Russo brothers who directed...
Jon Favreau, then Joss Whedon, then Russo brothers, then Joss Whedon again, then Russo brothers all the way. Well, up until Black Widow, anyway.
Exactly.
I would say more of a movie. It was the Russo brothers.
Yeah, so Black Widow just got more silly as she went along, so...
I feel like she was serious. I feel like she was serious in Iron Man 2 and The Avengers, and then she got a little too jokey in Winter Soldier. Although I do like that move. I do like that portrayal the best, actually. And then Age of Ultron, I feel like that's when she started getting too silly. And then Civil War also too silly. And then Infinity War, meh. Well, she didn't do anything.
Yeah, she didn't have very much.
I can't get mad. And Endgame and Black Widow, I think have been the most serious.
Mm-hmm. So, why are we talking about Black? Oh yeah, Doctor Strange.
All back to Doctor Strange. It could be just the writing of Doctor Strange. As opposed to someone posing as Doctor Strange.
So we've just been getting a lot of new TV spots, more rumors, more plot leaks.
We might have confirmation because apparently the Spider-Man No Way Home soundtrack leaked out.
Yep.
And the one that has everyone talking is this one called Track 19, which is titled Unite, And it has both the Tobey Maguire score from the Raimi trilogy and the Andrew Garfield score from the Amazing Spider-Man movies combined into one.
Yes.
And that's what's gotten everyone talking. And then everyone was saying, which I've heard it, it sounds amazing. If that's true, I'm going to lose my mind.
Oh, yeah, it is. It does sound really good. They didn't use, like...
we both have heard it because I found it and I showed it to them. And it sounds pretty convincing. And then
which the Tobey
Maguire... We know it's real because it got deleted.
Yeah.
You could have searched it up on YouTube, but now it's gone. They took it down.
Yeah. So, I mean, but the thing with that is, like, for some reason with the Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield thing, they didn't use, like, for Andrew Garfield, they didn't use the Amazing Spider-Man 2 theme. They used the Amazing Spider-Man 1 theme, which I thought was interesting. And for Tobey Maguire, they didn't use, like, the main... They used the...
Yeah.
You guys, I don't know.
It goes into some of the more epic music.
Spider-Man... No, I'm looking it up. Hold on. No Way Home.
Track 19, that's how you find it.
Track 19, it's already trending on YouTube.
That's how I find it.
Track 19. Found it. Huh, here we go. So it's still on YouTube.
Well, it's not on as much.
It's on, like, you could say, I guess, it's on, like,
Don't show it, dude. Don't show it, because it might be real.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I mean, so we're not going to play it here.
First of all, nobody's going to listen. Nobody's really listening to this podcast. Nobody important.
But even for the people who do listen to this, like some people that we know, we don't want to potentially spoil it for them. So just don't do it.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
So, yeah, sorry if you want to hear it. No, we don't want to do it, because some people might get mad at us for potentially spoiling the movie. Anyway. So that's No Way Home, but we've also had another piece of Marvel content, which I feel has been a little overlooked in the past few weeks, and that was Hawkeye.
Yeah, well, which, I mean, I don't know if it's overlooked. But...
Well, like, sort of. Let me just say, Hawkeye, I was a little, like, at first going into it, I was a little like, okay, this is probably going to be a good show, because obviously,
actually, first, so we can make Hawkeye kind of our main topic, talking about it, but first, I want to talk about Sonic the Hedgehog 2, Sonic the Hedgehog
2. Oh, yeah, that's right, we got the poster today.
Yes, so today, just a few hours ago, Sonic the Hedgehog on their social media accounts and stuff after yesterday posting, you want to have your notifications turned on, and that little clip of Dr. Robotnik where he says, I'll be home by Christmas. And then today they posted the first official trailer for Sonic the Hedgehog 2.
I think you mean poster.
What did I say?
Trailer.
Yeah, no. We're getting the trailer, and they posted the first poster. And then they said that the trailer is coming tomorrow at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time at the Game Awards. So that is going to be very exciting. Or it is very exciting right now. It's going to be great. Awesome. And the poster looks really great. It looks 10 times better than any poster that Spider-Man No Way Home was able to put out.
Whoever the intern was making those posters.
Well, except for that last poster. That last poster was pretty good.
Yeah, because Green Goblin's in it. And everyone else is in it, actually. Well, except Sandman. You can never see Sandman.
Just the design is just really good. It's just a lot better. It's more interesting.
Also, one last thing for No Way Home. If you haven't seen the villains panel with three of the villains from No Way Home, go watch it. It's really good.
Yes, it's really good.
It shows the new Green Goblin footage. Anyway, back to Sonic. So it does look very interesting. It does actually look very interesting what they're going to do. Because the trailer comes tomorrow. You can't really... Well, at least for me, I can't personally get hyped for it yet. Because we don't really have a trailer yet. Although that comes tomorrow.
So, and you're just not the biggest fan of Sonic the Hedgehog in general.
Let me finish my sentence. I was going to say, I can't really get too much excited because we don't really have a trailer. But it is exciting to see because you have Sonic riding on the plane that they have in the games where Tails flies it and Sonic just stands on top like a boss.
Yeah, the tornado, which is interesting.
That's what it's called, the tornado. And then we have Robotnik in his flying egg from the games. And he's wearing a more game-accurate look with a big mustache and bald head.
Yeah.
And then, but yeah, also like Eli was saying, I don't love Sonic. I mean, I think he's cool, but I don't love Sonic like Eli does.
Oh yeah, because I'm a huge Sonic the Hedgehog fan. Definitely. I think that Sonic the Hedgehog is really great. I mean, I just love the franchise. It's such a cool, wacky, interesting world of characters that just is super fun to explore and hang out in, and I've really been enjoying reading the recent Ian Flynn Sonic the Hedgehog comic book series. I don't know if that is really accepted by the Sonic culture. I haven't really heard too many people talk about it, but that particularly I've been enjoying reading. I haven't really caught up on it lately, but like the recent Sonic the Hedgehog comic books that have been coming out. Those are pretty interesting to me. I don't know exactly how the main Sonic audience feels about them. I think they're pretty cool. And I really liked the first Sonic the Hedgehog movie when it came out.
The first Sonic movie was really good.
I mean, this is different from all those other live-action adaptations, video game adaptations, or like, I don't know, other stuff. Like, you can definitely tell that Jeff Fowler, the director, even like Ben Schwartz, Jim Carrey, like all the... I forget the other crew members' names, sorry. All of these people working on the movie, you can tell that they are all invested and that they care about this franchise and this world of characters, and that they definitely want to do it justice. And I really appreciate that, because a lot of these other movie video game adaptations just feel like a studio trying to make money. Like, they're just
stunt,
like,
and with stunt casting.
Yeah, they're just like, huh, let's see, what video game franchise or what franchise can we make into a movie and that'll make us the most money because it's so popular? And then they just don't even care about the story or the characters or anything. They don't care about doing them justice. But with this...
I got the stunt like with the Mario movie. They don't really care.
Yeah, exactly. All the stuff we've been hearing... The more we hear about this Mario movie...
The more it's going to be bad.
Yeah, the more that we hear about it, the more I'm just sitting there going, this sounds increasingly bad. Like, this... It doesn't sound like you really...
We're going to get another Super Mario Bros. Movie in animated form.
This is something that I think a lot of studios don't understand about, like, adaptations of existing franchises into movies nowadays. This is something that they don't understand. You don't have to change it up a bunch. We love the original franchise, and we
Some of the stuff is better left there because some of the stuff is dated.
Yeah, some
stuff. So some things have to be changed. For example, Spider-Man. You can't nowadays do the nerd outcast Peter Parker anymore because that just doesn't work. Because the social hierarchy in high school has changed since 1962 when Spider-Man first debuted.
Yeah.
Like, even speaking from experience, if we were nerds, we would not be socially outcasts at all. Because that's not how our society works anymore. We've moved past that. But, like, yeah, it's basically stuff like that. Like, some stuff is dated and has to stay on with source material, and you can't bring that.
But
there are certain things that need to stay.
Yeah, there are certain things.
For example, the character's look needs to stay the same, unless you want to modernize it.
Change it up a little. Like, Sonic the Hedgehog. Obviously, the original design that they put out and were planning to use in the movie wasn't the... That was awful.
Obviously, you can tell
that they struggled with the design. There were multiple like leaked posters and all this other.
One of them had Chris Pratt in it, and that one was my favorite.
Yeah, that, and then Chris Evans was another one.
No, that one was awesome.
Like, you can tell that the design was different. So you can tell that they were struggling to find a.
They struggled on a lead human character also, but then they settled on James Marsden.
Yeah, so you can tell that they definitely struggled with the design a little bit, but. A little bit is probably a little bit of an understatement, but they obviously, you know, were trying to find their fit for it. And
I could not picture Chris Evans in a Sonic movie. I mean, that'd be awesome, but I could not picture Chris Evans being in something like Sonic.
Why does Chris Pratt have to be injected into all of these video game adaptations?
Chris Pratt, I could see. Chris Evans, I struggled to picture.
So they were like, okay, what was it? These studios don't understand that we just want to see what we experienced in the video game or whatever, just brought to the live action form. You don't have to change everything about it. Like, the Sonic the Hedgehog, sure, they gave it a new story. They kind of changed a decent amount of things.
They made it a little bit more of a grounded tale because it was set on Earth, although that's just because Paramount doesn't like doing CGI worlds.
And even if Paramount, because if you didn't know, there were some production troubles with Sonic the Hedgehog, and Paramount gave them...
The first
Sonic the Hedgehog movie, and Paramount gave them a bit of a low budget for this movie.
But it looks better than X-Men did, the first one.
Yeah.
Because both those movies had low budgets, but I think Sonic the Hedgehog is way better.
Yeah, so obviously the movie like suffers from that a little bit because...
They weren't allowed really to do much.
Yeah, so the whole movie takes place on Earth. Like, Sonic the Hedgehog never goes to Earth. You could argue Sonic X, maybe, but...
Yes, you can argue Sonic X.
I don't know if that's Earth, though. That's like...
Well, it also has a weird forced Japanese kid because it was anime.
Yeah. So Sonic...
All these anime shows have some Japanese kid that is with them.
Yeah, like Pokemon or whatever.
And they never get called out for it, either.
Yeah, I really. Hey,
they say the same thing constantly, and they never get called out.
Yeah, like all these like anime TV shows.
TW shows also do that. They have the same formula where they take the lead character and give him a team of friends, and they never get called out on it. Shockingly.
Well, with what was it? I guess you can argue that Sonic X is not true anime. Which, no, it's, yeah.
It's not, but it sort of is.
It's definitely not a fully American animation. And Sonic X is good.
We grew up watching that show. We watched it the last few seasons. Like the last few episodes, but still we enjoyed it.
Yeah, we really enjoyed Sonic X. That was a really cool show for us to watch. But
we watched it every Saturday morning. I think that was the only Saturday morning cartoon show that we watched. Every single Saturday, we'd be like super excited to watch Sonic X.
Because we obviously do not live in the age of Saturday morning cartoons.
I wish we did.
We live in the era
age of streaming services.
Streaming services, yeah.
I wish I could have lived in the 90s so I could watch the X-Men show every Saturday morning.
So yeah, we don't personally, we don't get the Saturday morning cartoons, but we, when we were little, we did watch Saturday morning cartoons, and the only one that we watched was Sonic X. So,
which was fun. I have a lot of memories of waiting for Saturday morning to watch that.
Yeah. So that's really our only experience with Saturday morning cartoons, as much as we love watching cartoons on like streaming services.
Some people may be wondering what this has to do with Sonic, but it does have to do with Sonic, because it was Sonic X that we watched every Saturday morning. So take that.
Sonic the Hedgehog 2, and with all the stuff that we've been getting about, like, how Knuckles is going to be in the movie.
That was confirmed. Like, Elva comes in and was knock, knock. It just posts the picture.
Obviously referencing Knuckles.
He does it in style.
And,
Knuckles isn't even in this poster either. Although he was in leaked set photos, he's not in this poster. And they're probably going to hide him.
Honestly, we've gotten a lot of set leaks about this movie. A lot of Easter eggs.
It feels so fast since the first one came out. It feels like yesterday when the first one came out. It doesn't feel that long.
It feels short and long at the same time. It's like, oh, it wasn't that long ago. But then you think about, like, all the stuff recently, and you're like, wow, that was so long ago. Before the end times.
Before the dark times. Before COVID.
Obviously, you get Tails in this poster, which looks cool. Tails always... I didn't call him a she this time. I called him a he.
For once, you didn't call him a she.
Congratulations. As huge of a Sonic fan as I am... I don't know why, but I always mistake Tails for a she, which is, it's reasonable, because Tails is voiced by a woman, so cut me some slack, but, so Tails is a boy, right? But I always call him a girl, I'm like, oh yeah, it's Sonic and her go together, you're like, no, Tails is a boy. I actually think, probably when I was little, I did think that he was boy, or, what? I actually did think that he was a girl. Like, probably when I was little, I think I actually thought that he was a girl. Because he's voiced by a girl! You can't blame me!
Shaking my head.
So...
I'm still mad at you for that.
So, I always thought that Tails was a girl. But now I know that he's a boy, and I try to contain myself.
You better.
So, Tails is very excited to see this movie. Obviously, he was teased in the post-credit scene of the first Sonic movie.
They need to tease Shadow in this movie. He was basically just evil Sonic. No, actually, no, he's not. But he's just a hedgehog.
Yeah. I mean, again, the Sonic Hedgehog lore is very wacky and out there.
Weird.
And complicated, a lot. Just all the stuff that happens in the lore. Very cool and interesting, nonetheless. And I think definitely Shadow is probably inevitable to come into this franchise. Because the director, Jeff Fowler, the first thing he did with Sonic the Hedgehog was work on cutscenes for the Shadow the Hedgehog game. From 2008 or something like that. Around that time. So I think Shadow is inevitable to show up in the franchise. Like, I mean, just look at the facts, people. That's very exciting. And usually because in the franchises like this, you like the bright, colorful main character, and I like the dark, shady background character.
Yeah, I like the bright, colorful outfits. Like, when it comes to Marvel, I love the bright, colorful outfits. I don't like the black, boring spandex in the X-Men movies.
Yeah, which is interesting in the Sonic the Hedgehog franchise, it kind of flipped. I like the bright, colorful main character, and you like the dark, shady background.
Yeah, because Shadow is amazing, and Sonic is good.
So,
That's kind of funny.
I know Shadow's your favorite character.
Yeah, Shadow is awesome. I want Shadow.
And Sonic is obviously my favorite character. And I'm very excited to see. I mean, and Jim Carrey's Robotnik is obviously a very fun character as well.
Well, because it's Jim Carrey. What do you expect?
He's really cool. And, I mean, it's just... That's like... You could call it stunt casting, maybe. This was he
hasn't been anything in a long time before Sonic, so
yeah, this is like a big win for Jim Carrey because he had like gone away from comedy and he had been like trying other things. And
well, I think he just dropped off from acting for a little bit. And then here, and then Sonic, the first Sonic the Hedgehog just kind of brought him back. And now he's just, like, coming back for sequels.
Yeah.
He'll probably come back for the third movie. If he survives this one, then he'll probably come back for the third movie. And probably because he doesn't have anything else to do.
Yeah. Yeah. So, because before he was saying, oh, I'll never do sequels, and now he's doing a ton of sequels. So, that's interesting to see. And, in the background, there are some cool little Easter eggs here and there. I mean, obviously, the tornado is a big thing. Very cool for Sonic the Hedgehog fans. Eggman's Eggbot is...
Eggmobile.
Egg pod thingy is very cool. He has his egg drones. And there's a new type of Eggman drone, which has, like, a little pointy thingy. And that's a reference to one of the Badniks from the actual video games. And there was a reference... And the Badniks are, like... In the Sonic lore is like the critters of Green Hills or whatever Sonic was going through. Robotnik like captured them and put them in these robots, and they were like the way that the robots were powered, kind of. They were called the Badniks. So this seems to be a little bit of a reference to the Badniks, and there was a reference to the Badniks in the original Sonic the Hedgehog movie, in the scene where Evil grows scene, when he was flipping through the switches up in the background, there was a Badniks switch. So maybe we'll see the Badniks sometime soon. That would be cool. So, Sonic the Hedgehog 2, very exciting. I'm super excited for this movie. It's going to be amazing. They're going bigger, which a lot of times bigger is not always better in sequels. But in this case, I think it is. Because they had a pretty small, suppressed budget for the first movie. And now I think they're going to be able to dive more into the wacky Sonic lore a lot better and more interestingly in this movie. Because of the more freedom they've been given with the budget. So, I'm very excited for this movie. It's going to be amazing. Sonic fans are very excited around the world. Or around, you know, the clock. that's per se. I think it's going to be super cool. And I'm just very excited to see what they do with this movie. What surprises and what twists and turns the movie will take. That'll be very interesting to see. So, anyway... I don't think we can talk about Hawkeye today. I guess we can give.
Of course, we can't talk about Hawkeye. Okay, so last we sang earlier, there was a Marvel project that I think got overlooked, and it was Hawkeye. So that's a quick. Summary.
So I guess quick overview. We can do a quick little overview. So Hawkeye, so far,
One of the more. This is an example of one of the more like sideline characters from the movies. Like for example, Falcon Wanda, and Winter Vision, Scarlet Witch. Just to say, excuse me, Vision. Falcon and Winter Soldier have all, and Hawkeye have all been kind of like on the side, one of the characters that have been sidelined. And here's an example of a sideline character getting his due with Hawkeye, which I've always liked Hawkeye, and I'm happy that he finally gets to have his own standout show, sort of.
Yeah, Kate Bishop's kind of replacing him.
Well, it's more of a passing of the torch show.
Yeah.
Which makes sense, but it's sad, because I wish they could have done more with Hawkeye, made him one of the more, like, prominent Avengers. But
yeah.
I get it. You're working with six different Avengers. Someone has to be the one who... There has to be one who gets developed the least. And I guess, unfortunately, it was Hawkeye.
Yeah.
But I guess that's fine because he needed to develop the other guys. The other five. Other five. Excuse me.
Yeah.
So. But for the most part, this show I've been enjoying. I literally like the Christmas theme that they have going for it.
Yeah, I think you told me that Kevin Feige said he wants this to be a Christmas
classic. Which,
I don't know about that.
You can watch that. I think you can watch this and not have it not be Christmas time.
Well, no, I mean, I think I could probably see it as a Christmas classic, like something that families watch every year for Christmas as they watch through Hawkeye. I can see that.
Yeah, I can see that. It's only six episodes, and you could probably go through it in a snap.
Yeah. Wow.
Too soon. I just realized, you're right, they can go through it in a snap. I didn't even realize that. Okay, that was unintentional. Okay. But now I'm intending for it to be a fun. Anyway, but also they do introduce Kate Bishop, who I do think was actually a really nice addition. She kind of gets more... But I've heard some people say she has kind of like the Yelena problem from Black Widow, where the side character steals the show from the main lead. Where in Black Widow, it was Yelena who stole the spotlight from Natasha, which, yes, that's true. Mm-hmm. And here, I don't know if I fully agree with that, though. Like, I know some people are saying that Kate kind of steals the spotlight from Hawkeye. I mean, I do think that she gets more story development than... Clint does. But yeah. I don't know if she steals the show. I mean, she's good, but I wouldn't say she steals the show.
I mean, for some other people, I guess she does.
I guess anyone who's a fan of Hailee Steinfeld would say yes.
But yeah, so far, obviously Kingpin is going to be Uncle.
They teased it in episode 3 last week. For anyone who has watched the Netflix Daredevil show, keep your eyes open. We could see Kingpin coming in.
Yeah, and also recently on Twitter, Vincent D'Onofrio congratulated Charlie Cox for Kevin Feige saying that when or if Daredevil shows up in the MCU, he'll be playing like Charlie Cox.
Which is also a big announcement. Confirmed Charlie Cox will be coming back as Daredevil in the MCU, which is good. Which is awesome to hear.
Which, that's kind of inevitable at this point.
And we have an idea of which movie he'll be appearing in first.
Who knows if he'll be appearing in Spider-Man No Way Home. I think that he is. We talked about that other leak the other day or whenever we recorded it. Where it showed Charlie Cox with Tom Holland and Marisa Tomei or whatever her last name is and Jon Favreau all together.
That leaked photo.
From Spider-Man No Way Home. So
and he had to cancel. He was going to appear at some event, but he had to cancel, which was around the time of No Way Home reshoots.
Yeah. So who knows if he's going to be in Hawkeye or Spider-Man No Way Home or a future movie like Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, but I think it's pretty much inevitable that he's going to be in the MCU soon. And also Vincent D'Onofrio.
And you can't bring Daredevil back without bringing his nemesis Kingpin back to the scene.
And Vincent D'Onofrio congratulating Charlie Cox on coming back to the MCU. A little bit suspicious. Vincent D'Onofrio needs to stop, okay? They should just, like, cancel his Twitter account because he's teasing too many things.
I'm surprised he hasn't posted a picture of Kingpin on his platform.
Well, he did respond to it.
If he did post a picture of Kingpin, then it would give it away.
Well, he actually did respond to a picture of Kingpin.
He did?
Someone, like, did a fan art or something, or, like, a deep fake or something of Kingpin. And he actually responded and was like, he looks a little bit chubby or something. And he's like, but he still looks better than me, though, or something like that. So, actually, technically, he did.
He's not really teasing anything there. But, so Hawkeye is pretty good. I like the festive theme. But they have a lot of villain threads looming. And only 2 episodes left to wrap it up. So hopefully it doesn't feel clunky in these last 2 episodes. Yeah.
So we'll try to do maybe a review of the show overall.
We might try to do a review episode 6.
Yeah, so stay tuned for that. Now we're going to transition and talk about The Little Mermaid, which is our movie of the week. That was really awkward.
That was bad.
We're just going to talk about that now. So let's get into it. All right, before we begin, I just want to give a quick shout-out to Jeff Fowler, the director of Sonic the Hedgehog 2 and the director of Sonic the Hedgehog 1. If you're listening to this podcast, then thank you so much. And if you want to be on this podcast, then all you have to do is send us a direct message on Instagram, and we'll happily accept. And I might also email your publicist before Sonic the Hedgehog 2 comes out. So, either way, you will be invited onto this podcast, either formally or informally, like right now. Let's continue. Little Mermaid. What a fun movie. Let's talk about Little Mermaid today.
The funny thing about this is that we actually watched this, like, closer to when we released our last Disney movie podcast. So it was, like, about, I think we watched this movie about a month ago.
Probably.
which is kind of crazy to think about, because, like, our last movie that we did was Oliver and Company, and that was November 10th. And then I think, that was when those screenshots got out, around November 10th. And we have watched Little Mermaid around that time, and we're not recording it until December 8th.
Yeah.
Which is literally almost a month since we released one. Thankfully, we didn't hit the 1 month mark.
Yeah, thank goodness.
But yeah, so now we're finally sitting down to record a podcast on this. But first, Eli, give us the behind-the-scenes nuggets.
All right, so our behind-the-scenes nugget for today is that this movie was made mostly in, wait for it, bum bum bum, a bunch of trailers in a parking lot. at this point in time, point in Disney's animated history where the animators were kicked off of the main Disney lots because this time Disney feature animated films were not doing very well at all. The last movie we talked about was what?
Oliver and Company.
And that didn't do so well. Before that was what, Black Cauldron?
Great Mouse Detective.
Right. Before that. Oh, wait. Never mind. The point is, movies haven't been doing so well, and so
it's Black Cauldron, then Great Mouse Detective, then Oliver and Company, now this.
Oh, yeah. So, because Black Cauldron, the Care Bears movie, actually beat it at the box office. I think I said that before. obviously not the greatest achievement of Disney's. And so now, at this point in time, Disney Feature Animation was not considered important enough to be kept on the main Disney company lot. So they were actually kicked off of property, and this movie was mostly made in trailers, trailer cars, in a parking lot in Burbank. That's where they made this movie mostly. So, pretty insane to think about.
Wonder how much body heat they had. It's just like, oh, excuse me, gotta get through here.
No, it was like a bunch of trailers. So, they had, each, like, everybody had their own space, so.
Oh, never mind.
So, that's pretty crazy. Like, that's a level of dedication. Because it's even crazy to think about nowadays that Disney Feature Animation wasn't considered important enough to be a part of the Disney company. Because nowadays, it's like their main thing. Because after, obviously, Little Mermaid, and after Aladdin and Beauty and the Beast, and Lion King, and Hunchback of Notre Dame, and Hunchback of Notre Dame wasn't really that successful, was it?
No.
No, right. After whatever other movies
Lion King out, was...
Lion King was the big one. Yeah. After all these movies, Disney was like, animation is like their main thing nowadays. And like, obviously after Frozen and whatever else.
Frozen and Frozen 2. Frozen was the highest grossing animated film, and then Frozen 2 beat that out for the highest grossing animated film.
What are the two most highest grossing animated films of all time? Frozen 2 and Frozen. Wow. That's
super convenient.
That's really, wow.
Disney dominated the top two spots.
Oh my goodness. What's the third highest grossing anime? Probably like Minions or something.
No, it better not be. This just in. Incredibles 2 is the third highest grossing anime movie of all time. So yeah, Disney and Pixar dominate the top three spots. Super convenient, am I right?
Yeah, well, I mean, they pretty much deserve it anyway.
Yeah, that's true.
At least Pixar does. I don't know about Disney. I mean, at least Disney nowadays, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
After the year 2000.
Year 2000? Oh.
Like, in the 21st century. I don't know if Disney deserves to have the top spots, but that's just my opinion. Anyway, so this movie was made by basically a bunch of low-level brats, the scum of Disney, the bottom of the barrel, and they went on to make The Renaissance, which is one of Disney's most successful times in their history.
I would say it's the most successful, but actually it's the revival era because they had
so all the ones. The Renaissance, let's talk about The Renaissance. So the Renaissance, in general, is just basically a perfect storm of events and people that shaped Disney animation forever. Like, this is unprecedented. Disney was at an all-time low with The Great Mouse Detective and The Rescuers Down Under, or whatever. What came out before? Oliver and Company. Thank you. Thank you, Jake.
You're welcome.
This is unprecedented, and I don't think it's ever happened again. Which, technically, you could say, I don't even think it's really that. Yeah, because even Princess and the Frog was moderately successful. And Wreck-It Ralph was fine. And then Frozen was just an all-out BAM! And then everybody was... And then that's really when Disney became a trend.
What happened to Frozen?
But this, Disney was nothing. Disney was losing to the Care Bears. Like,
they lost to the Care Bears, and then they put out Great Mouse Detective, and then they put out Oliver Company, and then they put out this.
Yeah, like Steve, the main person who was...
Translation, they put out Oliver and Company, for those of you who couldn't understand.
This is the main person who was the best at animation at this point in time was Don Bluth was the main guy keeping animation
alive. There you go.
At this point in time. So Disney was like at an all-time low. And then this was just the perfect storm of people. As I said before, Michael Eisner was the CEO. Jeffrey Katzenberg was the head of animation. Then this movie was directed by Ron Clements and John Musker, who also directed The Great Mouse Detective. Ron Clements directed The Great Mouse Detective. John Musker and Ron Clements, this were first time working together as directors. So, and they're obviously, like, super amazing. And so then you have Alan Menken and Howard Ashman doing the music, Alan Menken doing the background music, and Howard Ashman doing the lyrics for the main songs the characters are singing and such. Also having an influence on the story, actually. So this movie was just the perfect storm of people that changed Disney history, like, forever. And this movie is obviously a very... I think it's a very good movie. It's very well made, just very, you know, doesn't meander too much, doesn't take its time. It just moves swiftly. It moves nicely through all of its plot points with fun, lively characters that have interesting personalities, and, you know, there's fun jokes and gags and obviously songs along the way. So this movie is a very well-made
movie. It is a well-made movie, definitely, for sure.
I don't know if I'd say it's one of my top favorites.
I was actually saying exactly what I was thinking. Like, this isn't my top favorites either. Before we watched it for the podcast, I had not watched this movie in a long time.
Really?
Yeah. It's just, like, I don't know what it is. It's just, I like it fine. It's a good movie. It doesn't, like, pop as, like, top 10 material for me.
I mean, obviously it's a classic.
I'm not saying it's not. I'm saying that it is a classic. Well, I didn't actually say that, but I do think that it is a well-made movie. It definitely deserves to be a classic. It's just that it doesn't, like, pop out as, like, top 10. Probably top 20, but I don't know if it'd ever be top 10.
Obviously, it's known by most Disney fans and people who probably aren't even hardcore Disney fans.
I'm sure
fans.
People grew up watching this movie. It's also getting a live-action remake.
Yeah. And so, obviously, it's known by most people because it's a very famous movie. And it is very good. Again, it's very concise. It moves quickly. It moves nicely. It does... has nice, you know, character beats, nice cliches, but cliches that work towards the benefit of the movie, I think. Just the whole, you know, part of your world, you could say, that whole theme with Ariel and stuff. Has we seen it before? Or I don't know, if you could say, have we seen it since? Yes. I don't know if I could give any examples, but just like, you know, the whole Avatar, I guess. Yeah. Kind of.
What? Yeah. You're saying the story of Avatar is similar to this?
Yeah.
What?
With the
no.
The whole part of your world bit of it. Like how it's like, we're from two, like the whole romance of we're from two forbidden worlds and it's like merging the bridge between them. Like an Avatar is merging the thing between the humans and the...
The blue people.
Haven't
seen Avatar, so judge
the Smurfs. I mean, I get the general jits of the movie.
The tall Smurfs is what we'll call them.
Merging the bridge between humans and the tall Smurfs. And this is merging the bridge between the mermaids and the humans.
Mer people and the humans.
Yeah. Because there are men, too.
They're mermen, but they don't show them in the movie. Like, even King Triton's like, I wonder who the lucky merman could be. You don't see mer... Well, we actually do. It's actually in the final scene. Like,
and you do
like,
see
all
people...
All Ursula's unfortunate souls...
Some
of them are men, so I guess you can't say that there are men.
And the big crowd scene at the beginning where all of King Triton's daughters are singing about their names that all begin with the letter A.
that's funny.
Yeah, it's like Athena, and like, that's the only one I remember. All of them begin with the letter A. That's kind of funny.
Really?
And also, to preface this, I have actually seen all of the direct-to-video sequels and such. That relate to this movie. I haven't seen There Is an Animated Show.
There is an animated show.
But I didn't watch that because I don't want to devote my time to that.
you want to devote your time to any 90s show.
Eh. Well, I mean, just...
I tried to get you on X-Men, but that failed hard.
90s TV television was like... They made a TV show out of everything. Like they did... Hercules had its own animated TV show about when Hercules was little.
It was a teenager.
Yeah.
It was in between certain points in the movie.
Jungle Cubs or whatever that was. Made like five Jungle... book TV shows in the 90s.
They did Tailspin.
They were like Tailspin, Jungle Cubs or whatever that was. And they did the Hakuna Matata show or whatever.
They did Timon and Pumbaa show.
Timon and Pumbaa. Yeah, they had like tons of anime shows. And then you don't really have to see those. Like those, Disney Television. It's not really something you have to see.
Not all of them are canon anyway.
I mean, I probably get around to watching them eventually. Just not right now. I don't have any
interest.
You just
don't like 90s cartoons is the thing?
I'll probably get around to watching them. So
I tried to get you on X-Men 90s show, and that failed hard.
But anyway, I've seen the direct-to-video sequels for this movie. There was a prequel, and there was a sequel made. And
Were they good?
The prequel was fine. It was like before the events of the first movie. And it was like when Ariel was an adult, and it was more like... her relationship with her sisters, and them bonding, and like more about the mysterious death of her mother, Ariel's mother. So it was fine. It wasn't the greatest thing ever, but I don't think it was the worst thing ever either.
The second one.
And then the second one, I didn't really like the second movie. It was about Ariel's daughter. Her and Prince Eric had a child, and she's like a mermaid person. And the main villain is Ursula's, like, twin sister. And I forget her name. But she was, like, I didn't really like her. She just felt like a ripoff of... The whole movie just felt like a ripoff of the original.
A rehash?
Yeah. It was like Ursula tricks the little girl, I forget her name, to like doing her bidding and stuff, and she like tricks the kid and she thinks that she's doing the right thing because she's so annoyed with her parents and her parent drama. And then her parents have to at the end come in and help her, and their relationship is bonded and whatnot. So yeah, it just felt kind of like a rehash of the original. And she had two, or her animal sidekicks, the little girl's animal sidekicks in this movie, were just annoying. I didn't like them. They were like
in this one or the sequel.
The sequel. They were like penguins, and I didn't like them at all.
What do you think about the sidekicks in this movie?
Obviously, the sidekicks in this movie are awesome. We have Sebastian, who is played by
Samuel E. Wright.
Yes, thank you. Oh, wow. That was great. I blanked out there. All right, yeah. So Samuel E. Wright plays Sebastian, and we have Flounder can be a little bit irritating at times.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, he's still pretty good. I like him. He's very fun. And obviously, you gotta talk about the music in this movie is great. Alan Menken and Howard Ashman do such a phenomenal job. Like, they're just off the charts awesome when it comes to the music in these types of things. Alan Menken is like my favorite composer ever. I think Howard Ashman does like amazing, amazing lyrics. Just so witty and funny and just sharp and just amazing, on point. They're just awesome. And they're just a perfect duo. They had been brought on after their work in Little Shop of Horrors, which is their first time working together. And now they're working together again for Little Mermaid, and obviously they made it awesome. And Howard Ashman actually, he was a big force in doing the story as well. He was very much involved in, like, basically every aspect of this movie, not just the lyrics. He actually, at that last scene, if you remember, in the end of the movie, where Triton sees Ariel so happy with Prince Eric, and he's deciding whether or not he's going to, like, it was a scene where he was just deciding to let her stay with the human world. And originally the whole scene was just going to be silent, like King Triton looking, I think it was going to be silent, yeah, like, just, he wouldn't say any words, he would just look at her and then make her a human and then let her go with Prince Eric. But Howard Ashman actually, because they were fumbling over what words he should say. Like, they were having a lot of trouble with what exactly he should say to convey that he's going to let her stay with the humans. And so Howard Ashman came up with the brilliant line that is just, now there's only one thing left. How much I'm going to miss her. So he actually came up with that line.
Imagine that's kind of fit.
And it very much conveys what the scene is trying to represent and what exactly is happening in the scene. It's very good.
Prince Eric, I feel like gets underappreciated. I guess it's kind of an underrated character.
Prince Eric is pretty much like every other Disney prince, except for Aladdin, that has ever existed. Like, he's just kind of
generic,
bland, boring. Yeah. He doesn't really have any.
Because he's not, because, like, unlike Aladdin, none of the other princes are ever the lead.
Yeah, they're usually like. Like, people complain nowadays about how, like, the girl is stuck waiting in the tower. But in these old Disney movies, like, the prince of the movie is, like,
non-existent.
He's not stuck and waiting. He's not, like, a passive force just waiting for something to come and get him. But he's not, like, I don't know, active either.
Yeah.
I mean, in Sleeping Beauty, you know, he comes and saves Aurora.
It's like the one time he's active, but he's still bland and boring.
Yeah, like, character-wise, they don't have very much to offer.
But Prince Eric is voiced by Christopher Daniel Barnes, which I'm hugely I think that's why I like him so much. I'm a little biased because he's voiced by Christopher Daniel Barnes, who happened to voice Spider-Man in the 90s animated show that I love. So I guess that's the only reason why I like him, because I like Christopher Daniel Barnes because he voiced Spider-Man.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess that's a big that's really the only reason why I would say that this is like a good thing, you know.
You even pointed that out too.
Yeah, I was like, oh, wow, so that's Christopher Daniel Barnes. And I guess if you know that and you're a Marvel fan, then that gives him a little bit more value. But other than that,
because you know that he plays Spider-Man, like,
yeah,
a few years later after that movie comes out.
Yeah, but, like, other than that, it's really just kind of like, yeah, you know, whatever. He doesn't have very much to offer character-wise.
He's no, just kinda,
who is that voice that I heard? Yeah, so. And I definitely think that Ariel's character is very nice and fleshed out. And the relationship between her and King Triton is obviously the central focus of this movie.
The daddy-daughter conflict.
Yeah. And that's a nice, again, is it a little bit cliche? Sure. But is it a cliche that works?
You could say. Yes.
It definitely fits, you know, the movie and the tone and it. And I, if it's a cliche nowadays, then this is definitely the movie that started the cliche, at least. So, I can at least accept it for that regard, because, I mean, it's a very good story. It's nice. It's uplifting. It's a feel-good story. It's nice, funny, witty humor. It's just, you know, a very good movie. Very good. It's, I don't really have too many big complaints when it comes to this movie. Just a very well-rounded film. And if it's not one of my top, like,
five. It's not even in my top 10, but it is in my top 20, probably.
I'd say it's probably, yeah, it's probably in my top 15 or 20 at least. 20 is at least, it's in my top 20.
Yeah.
It's a very well-rounded film, and I enjoy it. It's just enjoyable to watch. There's nothing, like, there's no big thing that stands out that's like, ooh, that wasn't very good. The whole movie is just very nicely done.
Yeah.
Very nicely made. So, that is our review on The Little Mermaid, 1989. Actually, also, I just want to say real quick.
Play like a monkey.
This is the last Disney feature animated film to exclusively use the Disney Caps system. Which is, no, wait a minute.
Yeah, this is
the last one to use the Xerox machine, the Xerox method.
Now, they introduced it all the way back in 101 Dalmatians. It has been used since, and now they hear they ditch it. And then for the rest of the ones onward, they're digitally painted.
So let me explain what the... I think we explained in the 101 Dalmatians.
Yeah, you did.
The Xerox method of animation is when the animators will draw the characters, and then instead of, like, going to the ink and painters to, like, trace over it and stuff, it just, like... I forget exactly how it works, but the difference between Xerox and the CAP system, which is what we'll see used next movie with The Rescuers Down Under, the difference between those two is that the CAP system is the animators will draw the characters, and then it will be given to a computer while they will digitally paint and flesh out the characters instead of having to copy the image and, like, flipped over, turn on a piece of celluloid, and then the animators have to hand paint it. Blah, blah, all digitally done, digitally painted. So it looks a lot better, and it is more transformed into a digital form of animation. So therefore, you can, like, remaster it a lot better every year, or every 10 years, or however Disney does it. So this is the last film to use that exclusively. And you actually see little bits of the CAP system being used in this. In the opening scene, the pirate ship in some shots is actually a 3D model. Using the CAP system.
Huh, interesting.
A lot of these early Disney feature animated films will mix the 3D with the 2D. You can see that in, specifically, Aladdin. The one that comes to mind is Cave of Wonders. Obviously, the 3D head. That's obviously with 3D. And then some bubbles in the lava of the Cave of Wonders are actually 3D.
Yeah.
So
save Aladdin, talk when we get to Aladdin, Eli.
So this is the last film to use the Xerox method of animation, and I personally think that the CAP system looks a whole lot better, looks so good, and I'm so excited to see the movies coming up, because, well, I mean, I've already seen them, but they're going to be amazing, and it's going to be good to see them again. So anyway, yes, that's a review of Little Mermaid. I'd probably give it an 8 out of 10.
I'd probably give it an 8. Solid 8. Kind of...
Very good movie.
Yeah.
Very good.
Could have used a little more meat, but for the most part, from what they did, it was a pretty good movie.
Very good movie. Yes, I really enjoyed it. So yes, thank you for listening, and Jake, close us out.
So without further ado, that's our show for today. So be sure to go watch Eli at Hollingsworth Enterprises and watch me at JBHG. Was that Minecraft Madness, the Nostalgia Freaks, which has been renamed, and now the Movie Majors YouTube channel, all of that on YouTube. Be sure to keep listening to this podcast. Check out the X-Files podcast that I have with Eli Spencer. We'll be back soon, shortly.
And you'll hear us real soon.